calling to order this meeting of the Pacifica Audit Committee, open session for June 11th, 2018. Sorry to our listeners that we're starting a little late. Can we call this meeting to, let's see, it's 10:13. And Madam Secretary, do we need to repeat the roll call?
Yes, Madam Chair, for the stream.
Okay. Let's do it quickly.
Okay. Celine Roberts.
Hello.
Present.
Did you Ken? Say Ken Lauer?
Staggerson.
Not yet, Ken.
Staggerson is here.
You? Ken Lauer?
Here.
Julie Hewitt?
Here.
Aileen Rosen?
Here.
Grace Aaron?
Here.
Adrienne LaViolette?
Here.
Adriana Casney is here. Maskila, Washington.
She's
Carol
not here.
Carol Travis.
Not here.
Elaine Duncan. Jaime Gomez. And Dorothy Rake. Madam Chair, we have 8 members.
Okay.
It's a quorum. Thank you.
All right. We didn't need to actually use timekeepers in the first meeting. Do we need one for this meeting? Julie, I'll just call on you to, you know, keep us on the straight and narrow if we need to do that, okay?
I'll watch the time.
Thank you. Okay, and next point is the approval of the agenda, which is followed by, number one, the presentation by Doug Regalia, our auditor, of the fiscal year 2016 audited financial statements. Then questions and discussion, and then selection of the next meeting date. That's all I've got on the agenda. Can we move to approve it? Or I move to approve it.
So moved.
Any objections? Okay, that's approved. Doug, please go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. My name is Doug Regalia. I believe also on the phone from our office is Wendy Thomas. Wendy was the senior audit manager, essentially was in charge of the audits for the last two fiscal years from start to finish. Also on the phone, I believe, is Janine Regalia, one of my daughters. She's a CPA. She contributed and helped with the audit, and her area of work dealt with some of the liabilities. We had some others in the office who are not on the phone call, but there was support staff, at least two other people in the office, perhaps a third. But we are tasked with the job of presenting to this audit committee the September 2016 financial statement. And it is a voluminous document, total pages amounting to 33. Of course, that includes a cover, a table of contents. So I'm kind of going through the report as I speak. The third page in, we get to the independent auditor's report, and it consumes 2 pages. And you may see, I'll highlight to you some of the language. The first few paragraphs are the standard that you will see in any audited financial statement. We did audit the 2 years, 2016 and 2015. These are comparative statements, and we were the primary auditors for both fiscal years. We felt that because of certain circumstances, the most, I think, important one being the pension plans, not having completed audits or tax filings for at least a couple of years on one of them and at least 1 year on another, is a scope restriction that prevents us from having an unmodified or an unqualified opinion. And therefore, in the opinion on page 1B, about a third of the way down the page, you do see the words qualified opinion. And essentially what we're saying is, well, we opine on all of the financial data that you're, that is included in the financial statements, except for the possible or potential effects and adjustments which might be important enough had the audits been concluded to make adjustments within the financial statements. Since those audits aren't complete and perhaps won't be complete for some time, it's an unknown. And how significant of an unknown is it? We don't know. But we believe it's a very important matter. I believe the IRS feels it's very important. And generally, if you ask an auditor, if the IRS considers something to be important, and if the IRS is pursuing an investigation in an area and it is just beginning, that's going to give any auditor a pause and is going to cause them to carefully, as best as they can, understand the circumstances and then determine what impact, if any, that situation might have on the audited financial statement. And you might say, well, are you forced to do this opinion? No. Some other firm or some other circumstances might dictate, well, we're going to wait and see. We're not going to finish the audit. We're just going to push the pause button and allow time to take care of the matters involved, which in this case probably would be an IRS audit investigation. And I'm aware of these kinds of activities, and you're probably looking at a 13, 14, 15, 16-month process, and that's being optimistic, I think. And then upon the conclusion of that, oh, boy, you're going to have a lot more information, probably, to better assess what impacts those results have in regards to the financial statements. And then at that time, you might be able to issue an unqualified or an unmodified opinion. So you have all the information, and now you've properly assessed it and put the footnotes in place, accrued whatever is necessary in the books, and you remove this language. I don't think we have the time to do that. And the reason I say that is we were granted an extension by the Attorney General to satisfy a filing requirement that required the completion of the audit for September 30, 2016, back in August 15, 2017. And so that wasn't going to happen. And we requested an extension, and one was granted in February. And then we asked for another extension, okay? And we provided sufficient evidence to allow the Attorney General to believe what we told them. And what we told them was we're underway in the audit. There's a lot happening. And we're very sorry, but we do need some additional time. And they graciously said, great, well, we're going to give you to June 19th. And they're not going to give you any more extensions. They figure, give us what you got. And so that's what we're doing. We're at this point out of necessity. We need to conclude this engagement. And there's such an unknown matter here that this forces us to have this language. And some people may not like that. It's a reality. The important thing, the good news, if you want to call it good news, is the state of California, the California Attorney General, doesn't care if it's an unmodified or a modified opinion. That has no bearing on their decision to mark and cross the box off that says, yes, you complied with state statute in having an audit performed. That's it. And without their approval, they can pull the exempt charter of the organization. That's a critically important matter. So the task here ahead of us is to satisfy the Attorney General's requirement to have an audit submitted with the amended tax returns, and they'll be happy. They'll at least be happy until September 30, 2017, tax return is due. And that's coming up August 15th. So this is the reason for the qualified opinion. We have an other matters comment at the bottom of the page, and that has to deal with the organization's ability to continue as a going concern. And so that's an issue. That's been an issue for a couple of years now. And indeed, one of the more critical aspects to the organization's long-term health is its ability to generate sufficient cash flows to fund all the ongoing operating costs, to fund the debt service that is now going to be coming onto the books, not in this period, because that occurred after September 30, 2016, but it's happening 2017, 2018, et cetera. And so you might say, well, why did you even look at that since you're looking at 2016? Because we have an obligation to look at subsequent events. We have to look at what's going on currently because it does impact our audit and our opinion. And so we feel that there are some challenges ahead for the organization, and I think some of the footnotes deal with that. And perhaps we could have had longer footnotes, but I think in a sense we have reasonably accurate recaps in the footnotes. I think note 20, 21, et cetera, have some pretty good language to give the reader a sense of why the situation is what it is. And that's really what we're tasked with doing, is communicating to the reader a summary of a sense of what's happening that present challenges to the organization and give some background as to why our opinion is worded in the way it is. And this wording comes directly from the AICPA. This is the language we're required to use. I just might add as well, you know, when you're going and getting your driver's license renewed and you're in the street driving the car, and the old adage is, hey, you better drive as if there's a policeman sitting in the back seat, right? Because you're probably going to obey all the traffic laws and not run a yellow light or do whatever it might be. And to some degree, that impacts us as auditors because we are subject to peer review. We go through it every 3 years, doing it for many, many, many years. And peer review would look at this and say, hey, given all the circumstances, did you have a report that properly communicated to the reader the situations that you encountered? And so partly this report reflects that thinking, that critical thinking that, yeah, there's someone looking out at our work. In fact, we're going through a peer review this month, and so we're very conscious of this, and we feel it's very important to follow the guidelines and adhere to what generally accepted auditing standards and generally accepted accounting principles dictate that we do. So kind of a long explanation for pages 1A and 1B, but hopefully allow you to gain some perspective and understand the approach that we took with regards to this. And it was a lot of work put into the language used in this auditor's report. All right, I'm going to continue. Page 2 is your balance sheet. So statements of financial position, the assets, liabilities, and the equity or the net assets. The first thing I'll draw your attention to is the total net assets, or the deficit in this case, the next last figure at the bottom of the page. So it's negative. It was negative last year, and unfortunately it's more negative this year. So that in itself would tell the reader, wait a minute, they have negative equity. What's going on here? And that's the number you get if you add up all the figures from all of the stations, the national office, the PRO, et cetera, combined with the audit adjustments we had. But that's what you're going to get. And by the way, I'm sure Wendy went over those audit adjustments. They were not an unreasonable number of adjustments. That's almost standard. So we started with numbers that had, there was red ink, unfortunately, flowing throughout the organization. I also comment on the balance sheet. Maybe some of the ratios that those with a banker's mentality might appreciate, because sometimes bankers say, hey, let's look at the ratios that we derive from the balance sheet. And so one very important one is what's called the current ratio. You take current assets and look at current liabilities. generally a banker would want to see. I put myself sometimes in the banker's seat. They're going to want to see a ratio of 1-to-1 or better than 1-to-1, 2-to-1, 3-to-1, et cetera. So your current assets are in excess of your current liabilities, because that signifies that you have the ability to cover the ongoing current obligations. Now, looking at this balance sheet, you realize that current assets are less than the current liabilities, and in an unhealthy way. That, I think, is consistent with some of the concerns we've expressed later in the report regarding the ability to cover ongoing expenses. I think that's evident here. There's another ratio called the quick ratio, and that's looked at. And the quick ratio is simply what cash balance do we have and what are the accounts payable? And again, you want to see a ratio of at least 1-to-1. You don't have that. And so, you know, well, okay, you've got some cash. How are you going to pay what you currently reflect as your accounts payable? That's a challenge. It's a challenge to the organization. I don't have the answers. I know cash flows have been, forecasts have been prepared, at this time. How meaningful are they? I don't know. And so we got them. I know it was a challenge for those preparing them. We didn't really actually get what we were hoping to get. We wanted to get an 18-month cash flow. We didn't get that. Wendy, am I correct in that? You still there?
I'm still here. We got one through September 30th, 2018.
Okay. So we wanted an 18-month, probably, extending into 2019 at some point, because when we look at what is required of us, what's required of us is to obtain a 12-month forecast from the date of the independent auditor's report. And the date of the independent auditor's report is May 31, 2018. So ideally, we would have liked to see at least a 12-month to May 31, 2019. And just another 6 months beyond that would be very helpful. We didn't get that. So it is what it is.
Sorry, I misspoke. We got one through 9/30/19. We did.
Oh, okay.
But it was a very high-level review. It wasn't like we didn't get budgets from all the stations for 18, So it was very high-level review. I'm sorry I misspoke. I just wanted you to know that.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry.
Okay. That's all right. But as you said, it was not station to station. It was high-level. It was kind of an estimate, as I recall.
Yes.
Okay, thank you for that. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it. The last comment I will have on page 2, the statement of financial position, is what we're not seeing. What we're not seeing on the balance sheet are the new note payables, the liabilities that have been incurred as a result of obtaining loans. That's not on here. We didn't accrue for those, and we shouldn't have, because they weren't obligations as of September 30, 2016. But they're coming on the books now, okay, for 2018. And so these are issues that the successive auditor will need to deal with. But that's one thing that is missing here, okay? All right. And you might say, well, why didn't you book it? Well, okay, it's easy to book the liability, So, we would show a note payable or notes payable or, obligations of $4 million, whatever it might be. But what would you debit? What debit would you put on the balance sheet to make the balance sheet equal? You're not going to debit cash. You didn't get the cash. Can you debit a receivable from a bank? No. Loans weren't approved at that time. So that's why they're not on the balance sheet. We can't put them on the balance sheet, but we can disclose and tell the reader about them, which we've done. All right. Page 3, the income statement, statements of activities and changes in net assets. And essentially, this is your profit and loss statement. And so we have comparative years, full comparative, September 30, 16, and 15. And you can see the various elements of income. You can see that total income went down. Just looking at total revenue support, $11.5 million last year, $10.5 million almost this year. So it went down $1 million. You can see the various categories that that had a say in that decline. And then we see here an increase in expenses. So, declining revenues, increasing expenditures, resulting this year in a deficit of slightly more than $2 million. So, tough news in terms of what's being reflected in your equity account, your net assets. And as earlier mentioned, those net assets now are negative $4,500,000. I might add, just for purposes of looking into the future and some of the new GAAP requirements that have come into play. Okay, so the Financial Accounting Standards Board issued in August 2016 an ASU Accounting Standards Update 2016-14 that deals with a lot of issues that impact the presentation of the financial statements. One of them being, and it's good to show on this page, they're combining temp restricted and permanently restricted into one category called net assets with donor restrictions. So not for 2017 and really not for 2018, because the effective date is for fiscal years beginning after December 15, 2017. So really for you for 2019, those new report requirements will be coming into play. Okay. And so that was part of the management letter that was indicated. So I just thought I'd show you the impact here. So it's going to clean up this statement a little bit. We'll get rid of one column for both years. So, all right, on page 4, statement of cash flows. So the purpose here is to provide the reader with information about the cash flows of the organization and what happened during the year. Did cash go up or down? In this case, cash did go up. All right, and you might say, well, that's good news. Yeah, sure, it's good news. And a lot of that was the result of bills that weren't paid, okay? And so that's, I think, evidenced in the top section, the first half page, if you will, where we talk about cash flows from operating activities. Because using the indirect method, which this is based on, we look at changes in balance sheet accounts to give us reasons why cash was generated by operations or used in operations. And so the way to illustrate this, I think, hopefully, is to look at the line that's titled accrued expenses and benefits. And it's not quite halfway down the page. And in the 2016 column, it's $1,478,000. What does that mean? Well, that means that your accrued liabilities increased by that much. So those were bills you didn't pay, right? You didn't pay $1,478,000 in addition to what was there before. That's the new stuff. It's been accrued on the books. You haven't paid it as of September 30, 2016. So since it wasn't paid, it's kind of funny to think of it, but it is a way to provide cash. You didn't spend the cash on that, so it helped cash go up. And so even though we start with a net loss of $2,030,000, the top line, well, that's not your cash loss. That's an accrual loss, right? $2,030,000, the top line, is accrual basis loss. And now we're adjusting to cash. We're adjusting to your cash basis income. So we can add back the bills you didn't pay. That's $1,478,000. And similar to that is the accrued net liabilities. Really, that's New York. That wasn't paid, okay, obviously, as of September 30, 2016. That's an add back. So based on how these numbers flowed, you'll see that you ended positive cash from operations of $246,000. That's just the way the statement is prepared. So hopefully it gives you appreciation for what this is doing, what it's telling the readers. So, you know, sophisticated readers who might be CPAs might understand the subtleties involved in the interplay between these various balance sheet accounts. I will tell you quite frankly that the AICPA did a study, and the feedback they got from a multitude of readers and users of financial statements was that this page, the statement of cash flows, was the least understood, the most overlooked, and the least useful statement in an audit report. It is, because people's eyes gloss over, what is this telling me? I don't know what it's telling me. Well, hopefully I've told you a little bit. We could spend all day talking about this. I go to seminars devoted solely to the statement of cash flows. Yes, it's boring, but hopefully I've given you a little bit of more insight into this statement and what's going on. And you end the year with cash of 570. So that's what this statement is for. It is a required statement. So you might say, why is it even in here? Well, it's required. All right. Page 5A and page 5B, the next two pages, are your statement of functional expenses. So for both fiscal years, we have here a summary of all of the expenses in the three categories that are provided here. And we use these categories because they actually tie very nicely to the tax return. Okay, so Form 990, page 10, has an identical schedule with identical information. By the way, the FASB in 2016-14 said this is now mandatory as part of the basic set of the financial statements. Well, you're already in compliance with that. It's been optional. So some organizations say, I ought not to include this, which is somewhat silly because publicly available to a nonprofit organization. On GuideStar, you download the 990, you got it. So what are you trying to hide from anybody? But you've been following best practices. You've always included it. We've incorporated it into the basic set of the financial statements, so you're fully compliant with 2016-14 right now. And later on in the very depths of this financial statement, you'll see more details by station, okay, by geographic location, the totals of which tie into these figures. So this is consolidated, okay, for 2015 and 2016. All right, page 6. Now we get into the notes to the financial statement. So we are required to give some background about the organization. We have to summarize the accounting policies that are followed. I'll let you read those at your leisure because that consumes many pages, all the way through page 9. I'm not going to read that to you. So on page 10, which is the 14th PDF page for those who are following electronically, page 10 of the financial statements, footnote 3. So now we have an obligation to tell the reader about the details of the numbers they've seen previously in either the balance sheet or the income statement. So it's required to give the reader more depth what's going on. So here we have cash and equivalents presented. We talk about restricted cash, what those restrictions are for, the dollar amounts involved. Footnote 5, we talk about receivables and what those are when they're due. On page 11, footnote 6, we talk about premiums inventory. Now, I know during the year, one of the adjustments dealt with this area. And I know perhaps Wendy wasn't on the phone at that time. Perhaps she dealt with the reason for an adjustment in this area. I think that we had difficulty in establishing the true amount of inventory. And we've had a recommendation that inventory quantities be verified internally at the end of each year. But we made some adjustments here, and that's why you'll see that the premium incentives have gone down. But it is what it is at this point. And footnote 7, we talk about property and equipment, fixed assets. A lot of great information here. And, of course, the paragraph below the numbers talks about depreciation expense, talks about some other issues involving some restrictions on those fixed assets that are consistent with prior years. And we talk about new acquisitions of fixed assets. So a lot of disclosures in footnote 7 about property and equipment. Page 12, we talk about the note payable. Well, that's only being repeated because it had a balance for 2015, and so we're presenting comparative, so we need to have this footnote carried. But it's no longer there for 2016. So it's no longer there in 2017. This footnote goes away. Lease commitments, tremendous amount of work done here. I can't tell you how many hours were spent in this area. I might venture to say hundreds. A lot of work was done to review and verify the information that impacts the various leases. And so these are the disclosures that come from all of that work. I know Geneva's involved with that, Wendy as well, intimately. So if there are any questions later about this, they'll be happy to chime in. But we have an obligation to tell the reader about those future payment obligations, and that's been summarized here on page 12. Page 13, we talk about temporarily restricted net assets. These are donor-restricted funds that come in and then are released when the restrictions are satisfied or perhaps the time has expired that the donation was pertaining to. Then we have permanently restricted net assets. Those haven't changed, so very consistent from last year. And as I mentioned earlier, the FASB in 2019 will combine these two. So at this point, though, they're separate. On page 14, we continue with permanently restricted net assets and more disclosures. Then we talk about the endowment funds and the relationship between endowment funds and permanently restricted net assets. So we have all these required disclosures that are necessary for a full presentation of the financial statements in accordance with GAAP. Page 15, footnote 12, other comments regarding commitments and contingencies. And then really continuing along that line on page 16, more commitments and contingencies. We talk about the liquidity. I mentioned that earlier, especially with regards to the total net deficit of $4.5 million. I'm not going to read this footnote, but it's very consistent with some of the comments I made earlier on the balance sheet. We, of course, have accrued payroll and benefits on footnote 14. And that includes, by the way, some accruals, some estimated accruals for the pension costs, and which are detailed on the following page, page 17, because this is an area of importance. Certainly, I mentioned that earlier in the audit opinion, and the reason for that, I think, is well explained, starting at page 17 and continuing through page 18. So just a lot of information for the reader. But I think it presents a pretty accurate picture of what is going on. And this was obtained through just a tremendous amount of literature we obtained and provided to us, agreements, emails, correspondence, all that sort of stuff. So on page 19, apologize, my mouth is getting dry. page 17, here we get into the indebtedness and some of the new loans I mentioned earlier. So again, with regards to subsequent events, we have an obligation to tell the reader what has happened that has a significant financial impact potentially on the organization. Well, that's presented here. And so this has undergone review and scrutiny by management. We asked for their feedback to make sure we had the facts right, and we did get their feedback. And we believe everything here is as accurate as it needs to be and is, at least as of May 31st, 2018. And then on page 20, we talk about some other issues, including the New York litigation. The reason that's mentioned here is because it did impact 2015 and 2016, and really the resolution did not occur until after the end of the year. So to some degree, we need to mention this, but we do talk about this in the past tense, and we talk about the settlement. So the reader has, I think, a fuller appreciation that this issue has been, to some degree, resolved. Footnote 20, we talk more about the ability to continue as a going concern. I did touch on that earlier and mentioned that the footnotes had more information. I'm not going to reread the footnote. Then we talk about footnote 21, pending or threatened litigation and other matters. And there were other, quite a few lawsuits. I know Wendy was involved to a large degree. Many hours were spent communicating with attorneys so that we could fully understand some of the lawsuits that were in effect and perhaps still are in effect. All right, page 22, other footnotes, prior period adjustments. This pertains to 2015 when there was a significant number of them. We do not have any prior period adjustments in 2016. That was mentioned in the management letter. On footnote 23, allocation of joint costs. You're following the proper statement of position, SOP, and that's GAAP. And then we talk about subsequent events. And you might say, well, it looks like you're repeating some of the language you had earlier. Yes, on purpose. It's intentional because we're obligated to have a footnote dedicated to subsequent events. So if a reader just wants to go there and say, hey, what's going on, it's going to give them a pretty decent understanding of what happened after the end of the year. But we also have an obligation to the extent that some of these items affect other footnotes, to have that information in those footnotes. And so That's the reason you're seeing some repetition. Okay, it is on purpose. And that goes to the end of page 23. And then starting on page 24, I'm just going to mention that we've got here detailed, you know, station by station information regarding your assets and liabilities on page 24, your income statement, your expenses, revenue and expenses on page 25, your functional expenses on page 26. That's all for 2016, and then identical schedules for 2015 because we are presenting comparative financial statements. And so that's it. That is the presentation. And I did that in 34 minutes. I was trying to keep it to half an hour.
Diana? Sorry, I was muted. Thank you very much, Doug. That was great. I have some questions. Adriana has a question. Go ahead, please, Adriana.
Yes. First of all, something I really did, we need the listeners to know. But I will ask all the questions, will be easier and then to answer. How the Pacifica Foundation accounting policies and procedures compare with those of other comparable nonprofits? Were there any conflict of interest between the auditors and the Pacifica Foundation or any of its employees? Where did you perform the fieldwork? In which units? Did you see the implementation of measures suggested by auditors of previous year, 2014, to correct weaknesses in the internal accounting system of the foundation? You said that you did receive the financial recovery and stabilization plan. Was that approved by the PMB? And the last question, did you receive a cash flow forecast? You said yes. Can you forward it? Can you forward that cash flow forecast to the committee? Thank you.
Okay, great questions. I'm sorry I did not write them down, so I'm going to try to go from memory. This is Doug speaking. We are totally independent with regards to PNB. None of our staff, none of the employees have any relationships with anybody within the Pacifica Foundation network, either the national office or any other division. So totally independent. We did consider the prior auditor's comments, management letter input, et cetera, in the planning phases of our engagements, and we did follow up on the issues that were raised previously, and I think that has been addressed in the management letter. That really doesn't impact the financial statements. But the other points do, your independence question. Help me out with some of the other questions. I apologize.
Adriana asked, how do Pacifica's procedures compare to those of other similarly sized? Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, not favorably, I guess is the most the politest way to say that. Other organizations your size have, I'm going to say, a more centralized oversight board. They don't have multiple boards. I think and we've had other clients with divisions, but you have an over and the other clients that we have, you just have one board you're dealing with. I think that helps streamline some of the issues and focus. You've also got other organizations don't have the lack of cash flow that Pacifica Foundation has been dealing with. And so, and they don't have the debt either. So it's a different operational model.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not sure that I don't think I addressed all the questions.
Let's see. There was another She asked, where did you perform the field work?
Well, I think Wendy addressed that earlier,
yeah.
But as you can appreciate, the accountants these days do a lot electronically, so a lot of information is processed that way. You know, physically going to an office and looking at a paid invoice, it doesn't provide any better evidence than having the scan document, doing other procedures with regards to that. We did go to the Berkeley and the KPFA locations.
Right.
As Wendy mentioned earlier, she was intimately involved with several stations in terms of fully walking through the system and understanding the information that was provided to us. Wendy, do you want to broach that subject?
Sure. I had corresponded verbally and via email with every station, and either the business manager, if there was a business manager, or the general manager, or whoever was doing the accounting function on behalf of that station. And we went over the revenue cycle, the expense cycle, payroll, and inventory at each of the stations to obtain an understanding of how things worked. And then we looked at documentation to substantiate whether or not that was happening the way that I documented the internal controls. But a lot of this was done over the phone. When the stations were remote, we went through the national office and KPFA in person.
Thank you, Wendy. The other questions that Adriana mentioned were something about the recovery plan, and apparently you've received this. Did you have an opinion on it, or is it something that you just acknowledge? And
what have you got
to say about that?
Well, we have no opinion. That's not something that is part of the audit process. Yeah, it's evidence and it's information that we want to receive because it helps and enables us to assess the overall environment of the organization. It's just one of the documents we receive. So we don't comment on any document that we've received. But we have no opinion on any of the information. That includes the accounts payable list you gave. It includes the personnel files. Anything you've given us, any documentation, any statement of any future forecast, we have no opinion. No opinion on any of it.
Okay. All right. And then
I'm
sorry, Adriana, did I get that wrong? Go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry, but I was dropped from the call. But I asked if you received that the recovery, financial recovery stabilization plan approved by the PNB and the cash flow forecast. You said that you received it, and I asked if you come forward to the audit committee. And I don't know if you answered the other question.
I hadn't gotten to that question yet, to repeat it to them, if we could get a copy of the cash flow.
Okay, perfect. And did you answer the conflict of interest between the auditors and the foundation?
Yes, everything else has been answered,
okay.
I took notes and I can send them.
Thank you.
I have a question. Let's see here. In note 16 on the pension plans, I see that you put in $300,000 as estimated late filing penalties, assessments, and interest. I don't know if you ever spoke personally, with the auditor working on the pension plans or just with Sam, but when I spoke to him, he said that he thinks he may have overestimated greatly the penalties that we'll be liable for. And he explained it to me. He spoke very fast and gave me a lot of information that I didn't quite, not all of which I actually got. But I think it has to do with whether or not the failure to pay these pension amounts into their funds can be considered as a loan to Pacifica. He said different lawyers would have different opinions on that, but that Pacifica's lawyers do not see this as a loan. And so he said those penalties and fees would be less than what he'd been estimating. So anything on that?
That's a good question. And so FASB 5 gives guidance on that. So, again, as auditors, we're like sponges. We want to get as much information as we can. We did see correspondence. I don't recall if Wendy had the opportunity to interact with the pension auditors. I know one auditor left, and one, I think Rena is still involved. I could be wrong. And so we appreciate the opinion and the feedback from some other fellow CPAs. At the same time, we can't consider that to be 100% accurate, because that's their, quote, feeling or
right.
their calculation. And so, that's the problem with these uncertainties. We don't know. It could be larger. I mean, there could be some serious issues involved with the conduct of these pension plans. I can't even imagine the issues that the IRS might raise in an audit or audits of the pension plans. And I think that one is starting soon. And I've been through IRS audits.
Were you saying that you believe that the IRS will audit us directly?
No, I'm sorry. Maybe my words weren't coming through. I put you off speaker, so maybe this is better. Well, what we're saying is there are just too many unknowns, and we appreciate the feedback from other CPAs with regards
right.
to perhaps an area that they're working in. But, again, that's their judgment, and maybe they're being somewhat optimistic. I don't know. I wasn't involved with that conversation, so... You know, sometimes you want to tell your client the good news. Hey, it might not be as bad as we think. I said that before, and then the reality hit. So I don't know, and we can't place, too much weight on any one particular statement or set of facts or circumstances. And so, yes, it's an estimate, and accounting rules do provide for estimates. And FASB 5 talks about, you need to estimate for something that is an unknown. And is that the right figure? I have no idea.
Yes.
It could be a third of that. It could be twice that. I honestly don't know. But it's in recognition of the fact that there is some unknown liability. And I think the important part here is that you're telling the reader, we acknowledge there's an issue here, and we're just not certain. And that's, I think, anybody who sees that number will realize, okay, well, that's an estimate. That's not exactly the dollar. And it's going to work its way out. And, I think in about 2 years, you'll have enough information to determine what the number should have been.
Understood. And then at that point, this liability will be adjusted in whatever direction it needed to go.
Yes, that's correct. Absolutely
okay.
correct.
I have another question on note 11, permanently restricted net assets, the funds with deficiencies, that we have a deficit of, $639,212.
Yes.
Are we obligated to return those funds to that fund?
Great.
The permanent
fund? That is a great question. So what's happening here is, let me use the background. So permanently restricted net assets is a cornerstone of any nonprofit organization. It's the cement. It's the foundation. That means that donors have permanently restricted an endowment, $1.1 million and change. Under California statute, okay, if an organization ceases to exist, by law, it must take those funds and pay it forward, provide those funds to another nonprofit organization. Well, if, let's say, September 30, 2016 was the finality of the organization and you had to satisfy that legal requirement, you'd be short because you've got endowment assets of 400 76,000, but you're short 639. So what does that mean? What are the repercussions? Well, in California, it means the board members need to kick in some money to make up for the deficit. The board, and this may be the national board, it may be other boards. I'm not an attorney, so I don't know the legal liability, responsibility of all board members involved. But some of the board members, and they can go after all or any, or one or the other, the California Attorney General can, and say, we need to collect from these people, because you were in charge, $639,000. So if you all want to write a check, there's, let's see, 10 of you, 12 of you, 20 of you, whatever it is, here's the figure, pay up, please, and then you will satisfy California statute. Now, they can attach your assets if you don't do that. So you're personally liable for that deficit. That's what that means.
So
that's the importance of this.
Would the people liable be the board people who were board members at the time that the money was moved out of where it was supposed to be, or would it be the current board members whenever this problem were to arise?
And that's a great question. And my unofficial response, because I think to get the correct answer on that, you'd have to call the Javier Becerra, okay, who's the Secretary of State, and ask him, hey, are you going to go after the current board members, the prior board members, everybody? Everybody in the last 3 years, last 5 years, what are you going to do? And he'll probably say, yes, to all of it. Sure.
Anybody we can get our hands on.
Anybody is there now. Anybody was there last year, the previous 2 years, 3 years ago. Or when was it positive, he might say. Okay, let's go from that date forward. I don't know what date that was.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm just looking for my notes. Does anybody else have any questions that they'd like to pose? I have a few more, but I think I will just write them to you so I don't bore everybody else.
Sure.
Okay. Well, if no one has any other questions, here's just one on under subsequent events, almost at the end of that. You talk about during the year ended December 30th, 2017, the American Arbitration Association awarded $71,000 and change to SAG-AFTRA for mandatory contributions, which includes accrued interest, to the Pacifica pension plan for the period October 1st, 2014 through September 30th, 2017. So first of all, it says awarded. So is that just another accrued liability, or was it actually paid out in any way? And how does this fit into the other pension problems?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't believe it contributes to the pension problems. I think it's a resolved matter at this point.
Okay.
I believe, Wendy, correct me if I'm wrong, it was paid, but I don't recall seeing any.
Actually, my understanding, there's a couple of these, but I believe this one has not been paid yet. Now, I'm not sure of that. Sorry. I'd have to look and get back to you, Eileen, to just confirm that. I'd rather get back to you to make super sure.
Okay. Yeah, I just don't understand it quite. But okay, thank you. Thank you. That's helpful. Okay, I'm thinking that maybe we can let our lovely auditor.
May I have two or three little things?
Oh, okay.
Adriana.
All right. We still have questions. All right, go ahead, Adriana.
Okay. Let me, I go to point 17.
Footnote 17?
Yes, point 17, page 19.
Okay.
Go ahead. Almost at the end, you talk about the building will be leased back to Pacifica for a period of 2 years under an agreement requiring monthly rent payment of $4,500. I believe that that is a big exaggeration, but I don't think that, you know, I don't think that this is a move that is already done or is already decided. In page 16.13, liquidity, you mentioned there the financial recovery stabilization plan, and I would like to have the date of that too. Let's see, and I have one more point. Oh, yes. It's about page 23.23 too, said also subsequent to year-end, the foundation obtained a loan in the amount of $500,000, supported loans. The purpose of this loan is to cover the expenses of moving the WBAI transmitter. I think that that is not correct. I think that the reason for that loan was the restoration cost. That was the cost of moving WBAI, was the cost of restoring the site. In where we have an Empire State, when we have the that was the reason. No moving. No, we are not expenses that have to do with the moving. Have to do with the restoration. Okay.
Adriana, I did not get your second point on footnote 16. Can you repeat your question, please, or your comment on footnote 16?
Okay, page 16.13, liquidity, you say there the foundation prepared a financial recovery and stabilization plan. I will love to have the date of that there, if that is possible.
Okay,
Thank you.
This is Doug. I think we want to not be as specific with regards to the date, because it may be changing, it may be fluid, and so I think it just generically, I think that's the more important information we're trying to convey, and so I my preference would be to not make reference to the date.
But you, if you have it out the board, how us and the board and the listeners know what we are talking about. It's a restoration plan that I didn't see, and I'm a director, and the audit committee didn't see it neither. And you are basing the basis of your recommendations are in that plan that I believe that should be somewhere. The only thing that I'm asking is for the date of that.
Oh, do we have the date, Wendy?
I don't know the date off the top of my head, but I will get it to Eileen.
Okay. Also, this is sounds like something that Tom would have, isn't it?
I believe Tom should have this as well, yes.
James for the stack.
James, go ahead.
I just want to ask Doug if he could repeat the reason that he would not want that date to be mentioned.
Well, a good question, because it might indicate that that's the most recent version. We may not have the most recent version, or another version is produced, you know, tomorrow, and then we're out of reference. But you know, if it's highly desirable, then Wendy will locate it and we will incorporate it. So, you want
this
it,
is
we'll
Grace
put it in.
For the stack. This is Grace for the stack.
I hear you, Grace. Doug, were you done?
Yes.
Okay, Grace, go ahead.
I accept Mr. Regalia's reasons for not wanting to put a specific date. strategic planning is sometimes a fluid process. And so I don't think that it's necessary to have a specific date in the audit. Also, I believe that what Adriana said is partially correct. However, I believe the contract we had with the Empire State Realty Trust had a clause in it that obligated us to a certain amount of money when we removed our equipment from their tower. So to say that it was expenses having to do with that move from the Empire State Realty Trust, from the Empire State Building to Four Times Square, and to satisfy the Empire State Building that their equipment, their own property was not damaged in any way, I think that that what was in the audit report is accurate. What Adriana is stating is also accurate, but I don't believe that the entire fee is for restoration charges. I think that it's a
Are you saying that restoration charges would be part of moving costs?
Correct. I think it's
therefore
both
things. Moving costs would cover all of that. So we could leave moving costs as it's
done. Yes. I think that it's not just restoration costs. It's both.
Well, this is Doug.
Go ahead, Doug.
Perhaps we can modify the language to state that it is to cover moving and restoration charges involving the WBAA transmitter. Something like that. Would that satisfy?
That sounds perfect. Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you. Okay.
Adriana.
Go ahead, Adriana.
Yeah. I mean, I think that more accurate would be restoration cost for moving out of Empire State. That would be the more accurate because the line in the contract said only restoration cost.
I don't think we need to split hairs here. I don't think it makes a big difference how it appears to that level of specificity in the audit. You know, I think Doug's modification would cover everything that we needed to.
This is Serene.
Go ahead, Serene.
Okay, the contract does not specify an amount, but it does say that there are restoration charges. Some of us thought it was pretty ridiculous that they wanted us to pay to restore a room we'd been occupying for I don't know how many years. That's just, you know, ordinary wear and tear, but, you know, that's
sure, but isn't the thing that we're talking about the purpose of the loan, not what ESRT demanded?
May I finish?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
The lease said restoration, and that's what was included in any settlement that would have been offered, because that's that we're operating based on the lease. So I don't think we need to reinvent a word to call it. We should call it what they called it.
I'm sorry, which they? ESRT?
We are bound by the contract. We were talking about paying to get out of the contract. They used the term restoration.
I guess
we should use the term restoration. There was very little that actually needed to be, quote, relocated from that room. The thing that we're using a brand new, a different transmitter. We're not even using the actual transmitter that had to be, quote, relocated anyway.
Excuse me. I'm not looking. I don't know where this is in the audit document, but I don't think this matters that much. But I thought we were talking about what the friendly loan was for, not so much what the ESRT contract said.
Well, the loan was to satisfy a particular part of the lease requirement, that particular part of the settlement.
Let's finish this point.
I'm sorry. You just decided for the committee that Doug's substitute language was acceptable, which I don't think you can do. You can say it satisfies you. I don't think you can say it satisfies the committee, with all due respect.
Saying,
just to be clear, why don't we simply use the word that is used in the lease?
I really have no opinion on this. Fine with me. I don't.
This is Grace.
To that, Grace, go ahead.
If either you, Serene, or Adriana can supply us with that section of the lease with that wording, that would be the audit committee is just relying on your say so regarding the wording, and there may be another section of the lease which has a different wording. I believe it's a very lengthy document. At any rate, there wouldn't be any necessity for restoration of their facility if we hadn't been removing our equipment from it. So I think that we don't have to necessarily limit the wording in the audit report to the word restoration. I think that this is a minor point. And if you want to take it up as an item to be voted on, maybe we could do that. I think what's stated in the audit report is adequate, but the suggestion that we put both words in would probably be the most acceptable to me personally. But also, I would like to say that I'd like to move that we as a committee accept the audit report so that the PNB can also have the option of accepting it in the closed session on Thursday, so that it can be handed over to
submitted,
so that it can be submitted as quickly as possible. So I'd like to make that motion to accept the 2016 audit with the proviso that minor changes be corrected within the next couple of days.
Before we do that, can I ask Serene or Adriana, where in the audit report is this very controversial point being made?
Yes. It's not controversial at all, or certainly not the most.
It becomes so. Just tell me where it is, please. Thank you.
Excuse me?
Just tell me where it is, please.
Right, but you characterized it, and I want to say I don't think it's very controversial. But it's I think William Herwagen wrote to the entire audit committee over the weekend and raised the issue. So it should be in everyone's email. I'm driving. I can't actually pull it up.
Adriana?
Go ahead, Adriana.
It's page 23, and it's the second paragraph in page 23.
Okay.
And we, the directors that are in this call, we know that when the supporter loans was approved, the reason was that wasn't enough money to pay for the restoration cost. That is what is in the Empire State contract, and that's the word that we use, or the PNB used, to approve the called supporters loan, to pay the restoration cost. That is one of the clauses that that contract with Empire State, the 2005 contract with Empire State Building, has.
Adrian, point of information.
Go ahead, Adriana.
Adrian, but
No problem. Yeah.
Is there not a motion on the table right now, though?
There is, but I don't think we've quite finished arguing. I find this point really very immaterial, and so I would second Grace's motion.
Yeah.
other people want to pursue this, I would encourage you to do so perhaps in the PNB meeting. I can write a note because I will write up our questions and comments for the PNB. So, you know, then you can have all the documents in hand. Okay? How does that work for people?
Sounds good.
All right. Any objections? None heard? Then Grace, can you state the motion again that we recommend that the PNB, how does it go? What is our duty here? Our duty is not to accept, it's to recommend to the PNB that it accepts the audit with, you know, the minor changes that we communicate to them. All right. Is that all right with everybody? Can we approve that motion and then, you know, we'll write it?
Madam Chair, can we have the motion in writing?
Well, yeah. I hear somebody typing
I'm
away.
Putting it,
putting it into a motion, that's great. Thank you. You're good at that.
I'm putting the motion together.
Great. Perfect. Okay. Can we let the auditors go?
Well,
I think we can let
Doug
the auditors go.
Yeah.
Hi, Doug. Uh-huh.
We're very much happy to step off the phone call, if that's okay.
Yeah, I think you don't need to, experience our setting the next meeting and things like that. So, yes. Thank you so much. I think this has been very helpful. I will write up as much of all this as I can tomorrow and copy everybody.
Thank you, Doug and Wendy.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Wendy.
Thank you. Thank you.
And Doug.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, good night.
Bye.
Okay, good night. All right, I have the motion written out. I'll read it first, and I'll send it to everybody. The audit committee accepts the 2016 audit prepared by Regalia & Associates with the proviso that minor changes discussed in the open meeting of the audit committee on June 11, 2018 are made before the next PNB meeting when it will be reviewed by the entire PNB. How's that?
I guess I need to see it. Okay. Do we say in there anywhere, are we supposed to say we recommend?
Okay, accepts the
PNB?
Okay, that's true. Okay, the audit committee accepts the PNB audit prepared by Regalia & Associates.
The FY 2016 audit.
FY 2016 audit and recommends that it also be accepted by the PNB with the proviso that minor changes discussed in the open meeting of the audit committee on June 11th, 2018 are made before the next PNB meeting when the revised audit will be reviewed by the entire PNB. A little convoluted, but
about right.
I think it works. Okay.
Sure.
All right, I'm sending
it's
it to the audit.
In my world. Okay.
Okay.
Thank
I'm
you.
Sending it to the audit committee now. Just let me send it to myself as well. All right.
And then, let me get this straight. Am I to forward this on to the PNB then? Is that how it works? I got a little confused.
Yes.
That.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And to the PNB secretary. Okay, great. Thank you for doing that, Grace. Okay, we just a couple of more things, which are to select the next meeting date.
We need to vote.
Oh, what do we vote on if we accept this motion? Sorry. Okay. Madam Secretary, can you conduct the vote? Or is that my job?
No, I can do that. Is any objection to this motion?
I would like to abstain.
Okay.
Okay.
One abstention.
Okay. Does anybody else want to abstain? Okay. I will record in the minutes that Celine Roberts abstained. Is that okay?
That sounds right. No one else has said anything. Let's see who's still here. Besides me, Ken, Adriana, Julie, Grace, Serene, Adrian, and James.
We are the same age.
Somebody?
No, we are the same people.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay, just checking. All right, then. Shall we, I hate to do this to not you, but to all of us, should we schedule a meeting for next week to once again review audit firms?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So I guess that would have to be the first meeting then. All right. But maybe just, I'm hoping that could be just a one-hour meeting, I hope, next week. That's what we'll shoot for. Madam Secretary, can you post that meeting?
Yes. Can you repeat the date?
June
18th.
Yes. 18th. Exactly. A week from tonight, June 18th at 8:30 p.m., a one-hour closed session.
1 hour. Executive only.
Yes.
Okay. Perfect.
Thank you very much, Eileen. Much
okay, thank you.
Thank you, Eileen.
Thank you.
We've done great work tonight. This was, you know, a heavy meeting. So 3 hours, boom, we're done. Congratulations and thanks to everyone. And you'll be hearing from me. Oh, yes.
I moved to adjourn.
Oh, thank you. I always forget that part. James, did I hear you?
Second.
No, I'm good.
Okay, so we're all done.
Thank you.
All right. Go have a drink. Okay. See you guys. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
All right.
Night.